Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Progressive Britain podcast. This is the podcast with the unpopular opinion that progressive centre-left politics has a lot to offer the modern world. Today, Tuesday the 15th of January, is the big day when Theresa May's withdrawal agreement is voted on by Parliament. I'm Connor Pope and I'll be doing a short look ahead to the vote and how the evening will unfold with Alison McGovern and Stephanie Lloyd before a more detailed assessment on Friday's show. And with a growing culture of harassment from a small cabal of right-wing thugs on the streets outside Parliament, I also talked to Hope Not Hate's Matthew McGregor about the state of the far right in the UK. Before we talk about the big vote itself, should we have a little chat about the amendments?
Well, we do always take amendments before the main motion.
That is
procedurally how you do it.
I wanted to start on the big vote, but you said amendments. Let's go.
So amendments, Alison, come first.
Alison, amendments. What's that about?
So the way that this works, I mean, when anybody really, I suppose, who's ever sat in a Labour Party or trade union branch meeting knows what this is about, that basically the government have put their motion down to support their withdrawal agreement and political declaration on the future relationship between ourselves and the European Union.
Is this part of your effort not to use the word deal?
Yes, well spotted. Yes, I refer you listeners to many podcasts before, and a lot of people have tabled different amendments. It would be normal for the speaker to select the amendment of the official opposition and potentially significant other groups. Mm. And when I say significant other groups, like normally what we'd mean by that is like the SNP, because they're like the third biggest party in Parliament. Under these circumstances, you know, today we might see quite significant groups of backbenchers on a cross-party basis supporting amendments. So they would put their names down and they may even, you know, send the speaker a little note saying that they think that this amendment should be selected. And say, for example, you had an amendment that had the father of the house, Ken Clark, the mother of the house, Harriet Harman, and several chairs of select committees on it from on a cross-party basis. It's possible that the speaker might select that too. But there's a different pressure here on amendments, which is if an amendment was selected that was won, then that would also affect whether or not people would vote for the main motion in support of the government. So say, for example, the Labour amendment won, then actually we wouldn't be voting. The amendment would then become the motion. So we wouldn't then be voting against the deal. And I think the issue there is that a lot of people, are you with me, Connor? If you have a motion and the people who disagree with that motion amend it, then their amendment becomes a substantive motion.
Right.
So they then vote for the motion because it's their amended version. So their amendment has won.
Cool.
With me?
So by the time it comes to the big Brexit vote tonight, it might not actually be on whatever the government want it to be on.
No, it depends. Well, it depends if we win the amendment. So
right. Yeah, that's what I'm...
So this is why amending the motion is complex in these circumstances, because I think a lot of people have focused on the idea that what ought to take priority is, you know, disagreeing with the government. And I think that is a fair point. So what people should watch out for is what amendments are selected, which we'll know once the speaker has decided and made his ruling, which he does in a meeting just before the start of parliament. So
how many amendments might be selected?
Well, people have been talking about up to six. I mean, okay, so this is where I think what people have to realise is that the standing orders of the House of Commons are quite permissive. Mm. And also they are non-legislative. So we have an uncodified constitution. And a lot of the way that House of Commons works relates to a book that people will have heard of, I would hope, called Erskine May, which was basically, Erskine May was just a book that was produced a long, long, long time ago about how the Commons actually does work. So our rules are a description of how we work. They're not absolutist. So the best joke I heard about this last week
This is not going to be a good joke, is it?
It's not.
Steady. You never know. Try me. So the best joke I heard about this last week when the speaker ruled in an amendment last week was one of the clerks saying, well, it's called Erskine May, not Erskine Must.
That was the best joke you heard last week.
Yeah.
We need to get you some new friends.
but the point of that is that the rules are about what is done, they're not statute in that way. So when Steph says how many will be selected, all we can say is precedent and what normally happens.
Yeah.
But the fact is, this whole situation doesn't normally happen. So we are working at the limits of the constitution. So we don't know really how many will be selected. It depends on the case that's made for different amendments. But we'll know at the start of the session when they're going to be selected. And then we'll have the final day of debate on the issue itself. Then at the end of that day, then the amendments will be put first, and then it will be the vote on the government's motion if it is unamended, which I don't know. As we're sat here, I suspect that there won't be a winning amendment, but who knows?
On a slightly kind of adjacently relevant point, Erskine May, up until this point, has only been available in hardback form, which costs £400.
Yes.
And actually, for the first time this year, they're going to make it available online for free.
I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, and that's it.
This is a niche little tangent that we've gone off on, isn't it?
They announced it in December. It actually is really important.
It is really important.
Even when I was a lobby correspondent, I didn't have access to Erskine May. The only way that you understand parliamentary procedures and rules is essentially by doing it a lot, or speaking to people who have experience of doing it a lot.
Yeah.
And so actually, when you get into times like this and the past couple of weeks and all the arguments that have had, essentially there isn't precedence for a lot of things that are going on. So you do have to kind of make it up a bit off the hoof. And then you just have a series of, you know, parliamentary experts who are the keepers of Erskine May to go on the news and go, this is right or this is wrong. And no one actually knows. So actually this will be a really good thing for, you know, if this kind of thing happens again, whereas actually the rest of us will be able to look up and decide for ourselves.
It sounds like a weird thing to be pleased about, but it's definitely progress. Mm. The other thing that I think people don't realise is that if we had a codified constitution that took a more legislative approach to this sort of thing, that there might be downsides as well. Because, I mean, what we're finding is that through this process is that it is unpredictable, but it's also dynamic, and hopefully it means that the House of Commons is able to respond to what is a changing situation for the public as well. You know, in America, these situations where, you know, the legislature battles the executive happens all the time, and it doesn't happen in the UK because of the way that our constitution works. And I think that hopefully makes us able to be a more dynamic and responsive chamber, although there are downsides. Anyway, we could spend...
Yeah.
People write whole, like, books on just this subject, so...
Am I right in thinking the amendments will be starting to vote on from about 7 o'clock tonight? Is that right?
I personally think it'll be a bit later than that.
Right. And if there are six, which a lot of people seem to think there will be up to six...
There could be six.
And then there are 15 minutes per vote. So then we'd be looking at an hour and a half of voting on amendments, probably, before we get to the big vote, as I keep calling it.
Something like that, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So will we know by the 10 o'clock news is the big question. And I think we may well do, but it's possible that we might not do. We might be having the big vote in the middle of the 10 o'clock news.
So Steph, how do you feel that politics has changed over the past few days? Last week you were pretty certain, along with me, to be fair, that the vote tonight, the government's going to lose.
Yeah, I still kind of think that's the case. I still think, although there are a couple of Tory MPs who have come out and changed their mind and said they're going to back the deal, and there's a couple of Labour MPs who have come out and said the same. There's nowhere near the numbers that she's going to need to be able to get that through. I think the big question will not be when she loses, but how much she loses by. I think quite easily looking at triple figures in terms of some of that, it might even go into 200s odd or so within which she loses it. And then obviously she's got 3 parliamentary days to come back and give her plan B.
So next Monday, basically.
Next Monday, yeah. So I think the interesting thing will then be what's Labour's response to that. So does Jeremy then put down this vote of no confidence that they've been talking about for months and months and months? Or is he going to delay it? I think he's going to face unbelievable pressure to put that down as soon as possible. I can see a situation where he comes back on after Monday's statement and then maybe puts it down if he says the plan B wasn't good enough.
Yep.
But, you know, from his performance on Mar on Sunday, which was somewhat underwhelming to say the least, I think, you know, there's still no real leadership on that side of it, of where we're going to go next. So I think that will be the interesting thing that comes up this week. I think it might be slightly less exciting than we were all kind of hoping it would be. I think it will be a bit of a damp squid of a week after the vote goes down. But literally, whoever knows these days.
And tonight you'll be in Parliament Square. Is that right?
Yeah. So we're going to be with the Labour Say campaign in Parliament Square. And then we'll be watching it all kind of come in as it does, and kind of history happens in that sense. But we're going to be trying to make sure that, you know, we're pushing for the vote of no confidence as soon as possible from Labour, and also obviously backing a people's vote.
Final question. I've got tickets for the snooker at Alexandra Palace on Wednesday night. Am I going to be able to go? What do you think?
Do they have Wi-Fi at Ali Bali?
I think they do, but they're kind of...
He's not technically supposed to be emailing whilst watching the snooker.
Yeah,
so you'll be in the bar.
They frown on you using your phone while the snooker's on. It's not like the footy. It's fine.
It's not like the footy where they at Anfield anyway these days are very proud to promote the fact that they have Wi-Fi for you. So you can immediately tweet your hilarious hot takes on.
So will you just be in the bar for most of the snooker?
Sadly.
Which, to be fair, never knew. Yeah. Not a huge change. I would expect to see you.
Outrageous.
Burn. Yeah, so, I think.
It's a Wednesday. Why not?
What time does the snooker start?
7.
Mate, this is not looking good.
Yeah, see, I went with theatre tickets this week, but Monday and Friday, fine.
What are you going to see?
The Inheritance.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be very good.
My commitment to kind of 8-hour-long plays on the AIDS epidemic is the second one in the past 12 months I'd have seen. So solid commitment there.
Good.
Anyway, we'll pick up more of this conversation on Friday with a special kind of long episode about this vote. But do stick with us, because next I'll be speaking to Matthew McGregor from Hope Not Hate about the rise of the far right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm here with Matthew McGregor, head of campaigns at Hope Not Hate. Matthew, I wanted to start on the yellow jacket so-called protesters that have been targeting people such as Anna Soubry and Owen Jones outside of Parliament in recent weeks. How much do we know about these people, and are they part of a wider kind of extreme right-wing ecosystem?
Yes, is the short answer. The longer answer, you know, what do we know about them? I think we can tell a lot about the kind of people they are just from the videos that we've seen online over the last week or longer. They've been at this for a little while now. They're deeply, deeply unpleasant people, and I think that's important before you get onto the politics and the ideologies of this stuff. This is a small group of highly organized, deeply unpleasant far-right activists. And before we get too much into it, I think it's worth saying they genuinely don't represent most Leave voters. They genuinely don't represent a large group of people. Most people don't want to see this kind of stuff going on, however you voted in the referendum.
Frankly, I mean, I walk past those protesters on College Green every day, and the Remain protesters down there, basically their message is that these people don't even represent the majority of Leave protesters on College Green. They're a kind of different, right. Most of them
have Leave voters.
Yeah, they have, most of the Leave campaigners have Leave Mean Leave flags, but generally are kind of okay and they chat to them. Whereas there's this small contingent of,
I think one of the things that will, one of the things that gives me hope about how difficult this period of British politics is at the end of the day, I think most British people don't like all that kind of nonsense. And it's all a bit, you know, uncomfortable and, well, why can't we just, you know, let's just move on. Let's not argue about it. Let's change the subject. So I hope that the vast majority of people get their way on that. But in terms of this group of people, James Goddard is the person that has been most high profile. He's the person that's been leading this over the last, you know, 6 or 8 weeks or so. They started wearing the yellow vests just before Christmas as the French protests got a lot of attention here. He's a long-standing far-right activist. He has a big social media presence across not just Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, but also social networks like Gab, which is this kind of free speech, so-called free speech social network, which is dominated by the most kind of vile, unpleasant, hard right views that you can imagine. And on those platforms, he's a long history of posting really virulent anti-Muslim comments, many of which are quite violent in their tone, but really set him aside from most other activists. He's a very hardline person. He's got links with people like Timothy Scott, a former soldier, mercenary who was the kind of founding leader of Pegida UK.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
It didn't last very long. First interview as leader of that organization was so catastrophic that his fellow comrades asked him to stand down. It's on Channel 4. I really encourage people to watch it. It's on YouTube. It should be used in media training classes. I couldn't watch to the end. It was so embarrassing. But there are other people involved. Jack Sen, former UKIP candidate, who was sacked from UKIP for posting anti-Semitic tweets. Nick Griffin is encouraging this kind of campaigning behavior. So this
is he still around?
Yeah, he is still around. Yeah, he got thrown out of Hungary a little while ago. So he's back looking for a way, you know, a way to get into frontline politics again. And he's kind of around. You know, a lot of these people have been involved in the protests last year in support of Stephen Lennon, aka Tommy Robinson. Mm-hmm. James Goddard actually spoke at one of the so-called Free Tommy rallies. James Goddard has been photographed with Jared Batten, the leader of UKIP. So this is a small group of people, but they're highly organized. This isn't some kind of upswell of anger that has been caused by the Brexit debate. It is a group of people who are trying to ride off the back of the divisions being exposed by the Brexit debate and manipulate that for their own far-right ends.
So you mentioned Gab there, which I'd never heard of, but I think there's a lot of other far-right, especially news sites, that frankly I never come across, but appear to be under the surface doing quite well. What do we know about them?
Well, I mean, Facebook is the key driver of that kind of mix. It's sort of a swirl of some fake news, some manipulated news, some straight reporting of news, but with a far-right spin on it. And that is a big driver. You're starting to see straight-up fake news websites websites that have a kind of a neutral-sounding name that are being used to drive some of the content that they think will help them. Britain First, I think, pioneered this, and a real mix of virulent anti-Muslim content mixed in with an opinion poll about whether some character on Coronation Street should be thrown off or not. Right. And, you know, it's quite a savvy mix of tabloid-esque content mixed in with some dog whistle racism or outright racism.
Are there a lot of these sites?
In the UK, they aren't as prevalent as they are in the US. The US, I think, has been at the forefront of these kinds of challenges. And in that, that was the kind of pond that the Russians were able to fish in, because it was kind of standard to see these, you know, weird neutral sounding named websites and, you know, groups being thrown up from here, there and everywhere. We haven't seen it as much in the UK, but it is starting to emerge. But I think the threat that we're seeing with the yellow vests is originating more in a much smaller group of much more organized people who are using sites like Gab, 4chan, 8chan, places where they are kind of plotting out what lines of attack to use, how to organize, where to demonstrate, and then using the more prevalently used platforms like YouTube and Facebook to then pop up. Get their content spread around more widely. So, you know, the very confrontational videos that James Goddard has been making are a deliberate attempt to get clicks and create controversy and create attention to grow his own followings, to raise money online through platforms like PayPal or Patreon.
Patreon got taken down this week, didn't it?
He's been taken down from Patreon. He's been taken down from PayPal. He's been removed from Facebook. He hasn't been removed from Twitter, which I think is interesting. I think he's been a little bit more careful about what he says on Twitter, and Twitter kind of has an approach of being very rigid in sticking to exactly what's posted on Twitter, not what's happening in a wider context. But, you know, it's been a very bad week for James Goddard in that sense, in that the infrastructure that he has used to push his message has been removed. And I think that's a really important lesson for progressives to take.
You say that there's a small number that are very organised, but are they in organisations? Because it felt a few years ago we had the BNP, the EDL, blah, blah, blah. But now it feels like there isn't, I don't know of a single prominent far-right group that seems to have its head and shoulders above the rest.
Exactly right. I mean, we're in a sort of weird situation in which the traditional far-right, as we understood it, you know, the National Front or the British National Parties of the world, are smaller and less relevant than they've been in a generation. Yeah. Yet at the same time, the threat from the far right is higher than it has been for a really long time. There are new organizations. You know, some of the people involved in these protests are part of a group called Liberty Defenders. But these groups are kind of, you know, they're throwaway names just to have as a badge.
Yeah.
My colleague Matthew Collins, who's our head of intelligence, calls them DIY fascists. And I think that that's something we need to really think about and learn how to adapt to that strategy. They are able to keep on moving. We're not facing an electoral threat. organizationally, they're weak or don't even try to create organizations. Yet they're able to turn up at these protests, stretch the police quite thin, harass and abuse rather than commit acts of violence. Mm-hmm. So trying to keep on the right side of the law as much as they can. And then whenever they are stopped, if they cross the line, if the police intervene or if they're called out on it, immediately go to the kind of free speech debate that they're being shut down, they're being silenced and so on. And that's a problem as well.
Obviously, the most prominent group associated with a lot of these people now is UKIP. Where do they fit into all of this?
UKIP have, there's a real problem for us with UKIP. And thinking ahead to the local elections, I think it's something we need to start thinking about and talking about. They are seen by the overwhelming majority of people in Britain as the Brexit party, the anti-Europe party. They just bang on about Europe all of the time. And so any time that Europe becomes a big issue, their vote goes up, their standing in the polling goes up by 2 or 3 points. Actually, they are a party that has become, over the last 12, 18 months, completely and totally obsessed with Islam and a hatred of Muslims. Jared Batten, the leader of UKIP at the moment, is virulently anti-Muslim. The speeches he's given at protests over the last year have been some of the most anti-Muslim hate speech that we've seen on a public platform like that in a long time. And so, there's that challenge that people don't know that these people are a far-right party now. And so they could benefit from a Brexit fallout and use that to drive an anti-Muslim agenda. And so I think that's a real threat. The other thing that is going on within UKIP is, on the one hand, Jared Batten is continuing to move them to the right. He's trying to get Stephen Lennon, Tommy Robinson, to become a member of the party. Mm. And on the other hand, some of the more traditional UKIP headbangers have left. And so there's a space sort of between the Tories and UKIP for potentially a new party to come out. Nigel Farage is thinking about that. Yeah.
Has he left UKIP yet? Or did I make that up? He was going to over the Robinson stuff, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he's sort of been a bit confusing about it, and in his usual way. I mean, he sort of implied that he has, I think he has. Mm. Lots of the other MEPs have resigned, and I think he's likely to launch a new effort, probably ahead of the local elections.
Mm. Right. Okay. And so Tommy Robinson obviously had this kind of half offer to become a UKIP advisor on the table. There was quite a big hoo-ha about that it didn't seem it kind of happened in the end. What is he doing? What is his role? Because it felt like he disappeared for a couple of years. And then in the past year or so, he really has returned.
Well, he disappeared into prison for a little while.
Before that.
He is somebody who is a bit all over the place. I mean, he doesn't want to be bogged down in the minutiae of leading a party. Didn't have a good time leading the EDL. There's nonsense over money and egos and all of the other kind of stuff. And so I think he's quite happy to be causing trouble, live streaming, making a ton of money doing so. He's got incredibly deep links now in the US and Australia, and he's seeking to kind of popularize himself rather than... build and lead a movement.
That does seem to be the link between all of these. They don't work in organizations. They have their own Patreon. You can support my work and this kind of stuff. On a much smaller level, it was essentially what James Goddard was doing. He doesn't want to be part of a team that you raise money for. He just wants...
Right. And there was a report in the Sunday Times just before Christmas that Stephen Lennon had 2 million quid in his Stripe account, his donations system. Mm. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
He's also has built an incredible profile. The number of people that watch his videos is huge.
Yeah.
And that is a real problem. I think that as we move closer to Brexit and past it probably, he is a big threat to community cohesion and division in this country.
Finally, what kind of work is Hope Not Hate doing on all of this kind of stuff, and how can our listeners support your work?
Thank you for asking that. Team me up. Well, I mean, you know, we try to apply a range of tactics. I mean, we have a research team that tries to track and understand who is doing what, and not just in retrospect, but looking ahead to what they might do next. Mm. We try to disrupt and divide the far right, or just take down organizations. Last year, there was a big trial of members of a banned neo-Nazi group called National Action, several of members of which were plotting to try and murder a Labour MP. Yeah. And thanks to the work of an informer inside National Action, working with Hope Not Hate, we were able to foil that plot and take down the organisation. We also do campaigns, public-facing campaigns. We ran a campaign at the end of last year to try and block Stephen Lennon's visit to the United States. He's actually on a visa ban for entering the United States illegally. But given his friends in high places in Washington, D.C., we were very worried that they would be able to successfully secure a visa waiver. We ran a campaign to try and stop that. Mm. We've also been working with social media platforms to try and highlight where members of the far right have a broken terms of service. We've encouraged those platforms to try and tighten up their terms of service. Yeah. And tried to disrupt the far right in that way, but also looking more deeply at, you know, those are kind of trying to stop the symptoms of something that's gone wrong in the country more deeply. You know, Brexit in itself wasn't a particularly, you know, 17.2 million people hadn't read through the, you know, founding treaties of the European Union and decided that they weren't quite right. It was about much deeper things about in their lives. And so we do a lot of work to try and see where does fear and hope and loss and all of those kind of things, what is driving them and how can they be tackled? My colleague Rosie Cooper traveled 16,000 miles in the last 18 months going to focus groups across the country. We polled tens of thousands of people and applied really sophisticated and thoughtful data analysis to that to try and understand what are the drivers of hate, what are the drivers of fear and loss, and working in communities to try and steer people away from destructive and hateful solutions towards more hopeful solutions is in the name. So it's a kind of a range of work. And like a lot of organizations, we don't have the resources to do all of the things that we want to do and feel like we need to do. The work specifically that tries to track and expose and disrupt the far right is funded by the Hope Action Fund, which is a membership scheme that people can join. Sign up as a direct debit. That money goes directly to fund the work that pulled down National Action and for that murder plot. That we'll be tracking yellow vest protests over this weekend. We're expecting, you know, double figures of protests around the country this weekend. And that tracking and exposing of those is funded by the Hope Action Fund. More than 1,000 people have joined so far. So if your listeners want to support that work, that's the number one thing they can do.
Great. We'll put a link to the Hope Action Fund under this podcast. Matthew, thank you very much.
Thank you.
No pub quiz this week. That's because we have a special episode lined up. We'll be back on Friday with a look back at this week's vote. Make sure you subscribe now on iTunes, Spotify, or Acast so you don't miss that. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. The music was When in the West by Blue Dot Sessions, licensed under Creative Commons. And many thanks to the brilliant Caroline Crampton, who produced this podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.